welcome to another episode of Living Downstream. My name is Ryan, and I am an AmeriCorps member serving in the role of Environmental Education and Outreach Leader for the organization Umpqua Watersheds. For the final weekend in June, aka LGBTQ Pride Month, we're honoring the history, or herstory, if you will, of lesbians and other women in this region. Before jumping into the interview, we'll take a moment to pause for a land acknowledgement. To remember that prior to European settlement, indigenous groups tended the land and waters of this region and were often forcibly removed against their will. Some of the groups who once occupied the land within the Umpqua watershed and who are still found within its borders include Cow Creek Umpqua, Coquille, Malala, and others. Acknowledging this part of the history is a way to resist the intentional erasing of indigenous culture. Our next guest is Jesse Harris, the new owner slash steward of Cabbage Canyon, formerly Cabbage Lane, who will share a piece of Oregon's history that many people probably don't know about. To start out, can you share a little bit about Cabbage Canyon? What is its significance in lesbian culture or herstory, and what is its connection to the Back to the Land movement?
So one thing that I want to state before we get started is my words are mine. My truth is mine. And I'll do interviews and write papers and submit things to be published only with the requirement that they do not f*** with my words. Okay? Well, it is a seriously important piece of lesbian culture, at least on the West Coast, but in specific for the Back to the Land movement, because it was one of the original lands that was purchased by women and has been in women's hands only since it was purchased in the 70s. Originally, it was gay men and lesbians that lived there, but then the men moved back into town or in the 80s when HIV and AIDS started becoming an epidemic, and they felt the need to go back into town, and so they sold their chunk of 20 acres to the women who owned the 60, and the name Cabbage Lane came somewhere out of the mystery of the cloud somewhere, I don't know, but it's part of history, and it came from San Francisco. One of the men had gone to visit San Francisco and came back with the name. So that's the reason why Cabbage Lane was, it was Cabbage Lane, but when Debbie and I got a hold of the property, we changed it to Cabbage Canyon. We didn't want to mess with the history of it. And because it's important, as a matter of fact, Cabbage Lane, Cabbage Canyon, is eligible to be on the historical land site registry for the Oregon State Parks and for the LGBT archives.
Cool.
So it's a serious piece of history. And a lot of younger women don't know about it because it was way back in the 70s when they weren't even a thought in their mom's minds. But the original intent was for women to have a safe haven and be able to keep their children, because that was a big deal back then, and build their skills and learn how to do things without the influence of men around them. And Debbie and I are keeping up with that.
Okay. I'm excited to learn more through our conversation about that space. It sounds really important to have, like you said, a refuge and a kind of a safe place that's just kind of set apart. Yeah, can you tell a little bit more about women-only lands in general? Like, what does that mean, besides just women are there?
Okay, so way back when the Back to the Land was about every hippie and everybody going into the woods and making their own space, women-only land, from what I understand, was pretty much put together by lesbian separatists who wanted to be away from the patriarchy, away from the mainstream, and they had a point to prove that they could do it on their own without the mainstream influence. That's my impression and understanding of it. What it means today is in accordance with each and every land piece that's out there, because there's about 150 women-only places in the United States.
Okay.
So women-only can mean lesbians only, or it can mean women of any orientation and their girl children, or it could mean all of that plus boy children up to a certain age, or it could be lesbian only, and they'll state that, or they'll have, well, women only means just that, women only. And with a lot of the properties that are still out here, it means means and meant different things in different time frames for everybody.
Gotcha.
And what we want to do at Cabbage is make it available and a part of the entire community. So, and there's people that have a problem with that. And that's okay. We all have, you know, we all get to voice our opinion. And what Debbie and I want to do is make it a space where women only can have an event. Lesbians only can have an event. LGBT group can have an event. We want to have people be able to come out there and camp with their horses. Our main goal is to be inclusive and make sure that whatever event is happening is respected by everybody, and that that particular group has the place for their event, very specifically.
Okay.
Women only land way back then means different stuff now.
Yeah, it's neat how, I mean, this happens all the time, right? Concepts kind of change, or yeah, what we think of, or a certain way we might define something changes over time. And I was thinking about that. Yeah, like even the term ecofeminism. There are lots of options of books, but one of the books that I read for our Turning Over a New Leaf book club recently had to do a lot with ecofeminism. The book that I read, I think it was Reweaving the World, maybe was the title. And there were lots of different accounts of kind of what ecofeminism meant. And I had a perspective coming out of college of what it was, but then, yeah, there are lots of different ways to define it. So, yeah, I guess how would you define ecofeminism, maybe historically and now? Or how does it show up in Southern Oregon?
Well, so I want to make sure that everybody and all my friends that will be listening to this actually know that I'm not speaking for them.
Right.
I started my homesteading ecofeminism in Alaska during the same time frame that a lot of these women in the Southern Oregon women's community were homesteading the places they're on as older women now.
Okay.
I lost everything, basically, and I had to move on. So years later, now I'm in the Southern Oregon women's community and part of a bigger thing than I am, and the ecofeminism that I was familiar with before I was familiar with Cabbage was about people that sat in the trees and protested the extinction of the spotted owl from the loggers, and women who sat up and protested, chained themselves to gates to protest timber sales. I know some of those women, and they're passionate. And what they see Debbie and I do is change the term, not the whole thing, but the term changed over time.
Yeah.
Back then, it was protecting the trees. Back then, it was the spotted owl. The logging industry took a serious hit in the 80s down here. And it means a whole lot of things to a lot of people. It's a very sensitive subject. So I want to tread lightly. But what I see as ecofeminism for myself in the Southern Oregon area and with this piece of land that is very important to a lot of people out here is turn that ecofeminism into new technology things like solar panels all over the place. So that we can have electricity. We're going to have water at Cabbage, which is something that never was there.
Okay.
And because of a project that we've been working on, we're going to have running water. I'm going to have a barn where I can have my horses. And we're going to have solar panels that bring in the electricity to light our buildings.
Great. Okay.
That's ecofeminism. Part of the ecofeminism, a little bit, without getting too carried away on the subject, was taking care of the woods that I'm now in charge of, or that I'm a steward to.
Yeah, it's neat how, and again, how words can have different meanings, and just, yeah, like, my understanding, I think, of ecofeminism has been, yeah, having, like, a non-competitive, non-violent way of approaching interactions with nature. And so I think that's how I learned about it in college, and kind of the way that I think of it. But yeah, it's interesting to think of how people are activists in different ways, or how people try to protect the planet in different ways. There are so many, I mean, as many people as there are probably that many different ways to do things. So, yeah, thank you for sharing that perspective. Yeah, I guess what has the connection between women and environmentalism been, or what role did women play in the environmental movement or activism in the past? I think you've already talked about this some, but I guess is there anything else you'd like to add about how women have kind of taken the reins in terms of protecting Mother Earth?
Well, I can't speak for everyone, and I'm not going to try. So, with respect to everyone I know out there, I was an activist from the get-go, but my activism was about legislation to get our rights. I want to say my eco-feminism was political,
okay,
where someone else's, and some of the women that I know out there, were, they sat in the trees, and it really, it's the same, in my mind. It may not have been over the same subject, trees versus rights and legislation, but where I came from, my activism was verbal. I mean, I'm just a verbal person. I'm not one to climb into a tree. I wasn't able to be part of that piece. So my ecofeminism, my own feminism, came from being active in the community with legislation and defending people's rights and discrimination and all the other things that were going on at the time, too.
Yeah.
That was where I was, yeah, that's where I was my most feminist.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's interesting and inspiring that people have so many opportunities to get involved, kind of just different ends. That's one thing with Umpqua Watersheds that I'm trying to help with, and that our organization is trying to offer, is just different opportunities for people to, like with the radio show, voice their opinions and perspectives. You know, we also have activities that are, you know, going out in the forest, doing planting, habitat restoration, or sometimes we're doing what's called ground truthing, which is like checking out an area that's slated for clear cut. See, okay, what is actually here, and, you know, let's present that to whoever needs to know. But there's active on the ground stuff, and then there's also, yeah, writing to legislators, opposing certain things in writing, or doing programs. You know, I'm going to be helping with a summer program with kids. So it's there's so many different levels, you know, so many different ways to get involved. Toward the beginning of when I started Living Downstream, the radio show, I interviewed a couple of artists, and they were talking about how art can help with environmentalism, or art can help inspire change, whether it's social justice or, you know, kind of any issue. Like, if you can get people engaged and involved in some way, you know, some people like music and some people like visual arts, and there's just so many opportunities.
Sure.
And yeah, just like you said, taking like what you're passionate about and doing what you can in your own way.
Well, the way I see it is I was doing that while they were protesting timber sales, which I was totally aware of. I knew that there was things going on, but I also knew that the logging industry was taking a huge hit, and a lot of things changed for a lot of people, and a lot of people lost income and livelihoods for generations. Logging is a sensitive subject around here, and it involves a lot of things.
Yeah.
Livelihoods, generations, spotted owls, water.
We'll be right back after a few brief announcements. Do you have a photograph which captures the natural beauty of the Umpqua Watershed? Umpqua Watersheds is compiling photos which highlight the splendor of this region. We're collecting images of native flora and fauna, as well as landscape scenes, to feature on our website and use in a calendar that we're putting together for 2022. If you'd like to contribute a photograph, please email Ryan at umpquawatersheds.org. Again, that's R-Y-A-N at umpquawatersheds.org, with scenes of the Umpqua in the subject line. Thank you in advance. Are you passionate about protecting Crater Lake? Umpqua Watersheds Wilderness Committee will soon have hats and stickers available. Contact Tony Cannon. His email is Tony, T-O-N-Y, at umpquawatersheds.org. And you can find out more information about obtaining stickers or a hat. And now back to Living Downstream, brought to you by Umpqua Watersheds.
What we're trying to do at Cabbage is make it a healthy forest. I mean, it's quite literally part of our deal to maintain forest health. And we tried very carefully to be very observant and be very compassionate towards everyone's viewpoints. And one of the things that I had to do was find a person who would work with me in this project, this forest thinning project. And there was a lot of people involved, and a lot of people had opinions about it. And I had to find a logger who would respect my authority over the project and who would respect the land. And I didn't want to give away what the land was about, because it's Cabbage Lane, it's lesbian land. It's never been dealt with in the way that I brought publicity to it, you know? And so I was kind of giving up a treasure, which I had only gotten just gotten into my possession. So it was very delicate. It was very sensitive. And one of the biggest things I needed to do was find a conscientious logger. And I started down here. I could not find one. I found that conscientious logger in Anacortes, Washington.
Yeah.
It took a lot. And I found that person, and I was very, very fortunate. So the project came out the way we wanted it. It came out conservatively. It came out eco-friendly. We used a procedure that actually involved a helicopter and okay. brought the trees up into the sky and put them down where the log trucks can take them away kind of
yeah.
thing.
Yeah. Okay.
But what it did was take away the whole idea of pulling those logs out of the woods and destroying everything with them.
Yeah.
So the logs were pulled up into the sky and laid gently, as gently as possible, on the ground where they could then take care of the rest of the story. But everything was involved in that. We needed fire safety. We needed a healthy forest. We needed some road improvement kind of thing. And it all just kind of came together. And it had to, because I wasn't going to let it just get out of hand and turn into a clear cut. It was just not going to be that way.
Yeah.
We live next to one. It's awful. It's horrible to drive down I-5 and see all the brand new clear cuts. And it's a serious daily reminder of what we did not do to Cabbage. So
yeah.
I'm very proud of what we did, regardless of what anybody might think.
It's really, that's an interesting...
That was my eco-feminism when I had to stand there and say, no, you don't get to have any more trees.
Yeah.
You've had enough.
Yeah, standing up to
them. Yes.
Yeah. No, I just think it's really neat, the idea of pulling the trees up and flying away with them, because that is a huge problem, you know? If you go in, you make roads, or even if you don't make a full road, but, like, you're pulling those trees out, then that's mm-hmm. causing so much more damage. So that's
yeah.
really neat that you found someone to do that.
That was my contractor's idea. It wasn't mine. I had no clue. And when it was mentioned, I went, are you out of your mind? What are you talking about? A helicopter? But Cabbage is a canyon. I mean, we live on like maybe 5 acres of a flat spot. And the rest of it's mountainside. It's like this, you know? It's like V-shaped everywhere. And all the little places that we live or people can camp are on these little ridges that are just slightly flat. We have to make them flat. So the idea of, okay, that's eco-friendly.
Yeah.
But oh my God, a helicopter? It turned out to be the most interesting thing I've ever seen in my life. And it was very traumatic on top of everything else. And the neighbors loved it. They watched it from their mountaintop. So it was a total draw. But a lot of people learned that it can happen that way. They don't have to drag those logs out of the trees like that, and especially off of canyon walls.
Yeah.
So it was a great idea. It was a lot of, I'll never want to do it again. I never want to do it again, ever.
A lot of logistics?
No, it was just the atrocity of it all.
Oh,
it really was. I don't even know the word to use. It left me with PTSD for a very
yeah.
long time. It was really, yeah. I had to beg forgiveness every day from the trees that were being left behind, you know? Because it shook everything up.
Yeah.
you know.
I'm glad you were able to find, at least find someone who would agree with your values or how you were trying to protect the rest of the land and ecosystems.
Yeah, that was very successful. I'm not naming names or gender or anything. I'm trying not to, because this person is a genuine find.
Yeah.
And, you know how it is. You don't, no, it's nobody else's prerogative to out someone else.
Yeah.
And so, if they want to come and see the gym that is the improvements, people are more than welcome to come and join us next summer. When it's all, you know, more relaxed and things have been put together a little better.
Yeah.
But it was eco-feminism. I mean, my own brand of it. But.
Yeah, yeah. That's neat. Yeah, it's a good example, I think, for the audience or the listeners. You mentioned earlier, and I don't know if this is like while talking with you on this interview or during a conversation we had previously, about mining. I guess what happened with the mines? Like, I don't know anything about that.
Okay, so back in the 1800s, you know, that's a very broad 100 years. Everybody's familiar with, you know, gold mining. People gold mined from California all the way to Alaska in the 1800s. But in the area where cabbage is, back in those 1800s, it was part and parcel to a major, I want to say, well, it's a gulch. And that gulch was full of gold. And it was up and down the whole gulch were claims, mine claims.
Okay.
And at one point, they were mostly Chinese people that owned it, and they weren't allowed to claim it. So when Golden, the little town of Golden out there off of Coyote Creek Road, was discovered, and it lasted 60-some-odd years as a gold mine town, they bought all of the claims from the individuals that were using them up and down the gulch. And the gulch that is our canyon it was hydro sluiced.
Okay.
Looking for gold.
Yeah.
At one point, the entire hillside was completely treeless. It was just dirt. My contractor person was looking for landscape rock on the property. Couldn't find any. And we're convinced that's why.
Yeah.
Because everything in the process was about removing the trees and removing the boulders and getting to the gold streaks.
Yeah.
And when I had my contractor person come out and survey the property, they showed me, or they pointed out, where they could see where there was hydro sluicing slices through the, you know, it wasn't like fresh, but they could tell where the little bzzz, how they just washed the wall of the canyon with giant hoses, visualize a fire hydrant hose off of a fire engine that big. And I actually have pieces that we found in the dirt up there from way back. Even a horseshoe. They were packing supplies in back there, and we had a horseshoe. We found bits from large machinery. There's cable chains still dug in the dirt. And all that stuff was from gold, the mining before and the clear cutting that happened afterward. In the 40s, 30s, 40s, 50s, back in there.
Huh. Yeah, it sounds super destructive.
Oh, it was.
They took so many trees out. Like,
it was. There was nothing left. There were no trees in that canyon. The whole canyon was naked in that process. And there's actually two gulches that run through there. The one gulch wasn't so prolific, but the one that goes right up the canyon into, you know, way up. It's a natural spring, and they used it to hose the hillsides off and just cleared it. There was probably, at one point, 13 claims on that gulch, and most of them were owned by the person that discovered Golden.
Okay, so remind me. So then it was, like, owned by, like, multiple people, or they claimed it, and then with the Back to the Land movement, that's how it came to be, like, women-owned?
No,
there
was no connection. There was really no connection. Because what happened was it was mined to death. Literally, there was nothing left. Golden dried up and shriveled off and is now a National Historic Site. But it used to have, like, streets, and it lived for 60-plus years as a mining town. There was everything was there, and now just empty buildings. But after that whole heyday of the gold mine thing, it just got passed down, sold to somebody, paid, you know, just down the road to the 70s. I mean, it was just, there was nothing, no connection at all.
Yeah, yeah.
It just happened to end up in the hands, and it just happened to have this history.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know about the history until I started living on the land and reading historical books about the area, which is something I like to do.
Yeah. Now, that's neat, though, to think about, like, yeah, who was here before and what were they doing, whether for better or for worse. Well, I always start the show with a land acknowledgement, thinking back to, like, Indigenous people, but
there was Indigenous people back then. They got chased out.
Yeah.
There was a lot of that stuff going on around here. Yeah. I mean, I don't even know that piece of history. I just know what I have since read about the gold mining. But I'm sure there was more to it than I've read.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely positive.
So I was thinking, like, switching gears, if you'd like to. So I know we've talked about, like kind of eco side of things and environmental impacts. But do you want to talk about lesbian culture and how it's changed or no?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's do that.
All right. So, how
I have an opinion about that.
So in celebration of LGBT Pride Month.
Happy Pride, everyone.
How has lesbian culture changed over the years?
From my own perspective, because my perspective is I have not lived in the cities the entire time. When I've lived in the woods, and I've lived in big cities, and I've lived in small towns, and I've lived in apartments and houses and 140 acres out in the middle of the woods. And so it's not all based on what most city people would refer to as lesbian culture a lot. But what I do know about it in general is that the word lesbian has been looked upon as bad, 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 bad. And I'm sorry, but I don't see anything wrong with the word lesbian. I'm very proud to be a lesbian. I'm a proud butch dyke lesbian, and I will use all three words in one sentence. And there are people that have a problem with that. And that's the change in my head, is I don't want to be called queer. I'm not queer. Queer means odd. I'm odd, but I am not queer. That, to me, is a very negative word, and because of my age group, there's an awful lot of people who think that. And a young person can call themselves queer all that want. That's their word.
Yeah.
That's their new word for whatever, okay? I have a problem with people trying to get rid of the word lesbian.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about cancel culture. Give me a break. It's been going on for decades. With this particular word.
Yeah.
Just this word. Never mind butch femme. That's even a whole nother concept that's changed over, you know, it's like poo-pooed now. Oddly enough, I see it going on all the time, but it's not called butch femme anymore.
Yeah.
Called by other names that I'm not real sure why they think there's a difference. In my mind, there's not the same. It's just different words.
Yeah.
And it comes from a culture who hates labels.
Yeah.
And yet they are going to label themselves 14 different ways and then tell me I cannot have the word lesbian. No.
Yeah.
It does not work that way.
Yeah, I feel like it needs to be that people are able to use the words that fit them. You know, my parents definitely would say butch versus femme versus, you know, these different things. And, yeah, I mean, I grew up with two moms, so, like, saying, oh, lesbian is not a big deal. But I do know, I've heard it, even, you know, in back east, that some people are kind of like, oh, she's a lesbian. You know, other roommates. So the wording hits different spots with different people, I think.
Yeah, I grew up with having to call people roommates.
Yeah.
But not for as long as people in front before me.
We'll hear more from Jesse after a few brief announcements. Are you an avid reader? Then you should join Uncle Watershed's Book Club. Turning Over a New Leaf is a book club for teens and adults who are interested in learning about environmental issues and working to make positive change. We meet once a month to discuss a book or topic. Email Ryan Kincaid, the AmeriCorps member serving as Umpqua Watershed's Environmental Education and Outreach Leader, at ryan@umpquawatersheds.org. Again, that's ryan@umpquawatersheds.org for more information. Umpqua Watersheds is now offering opportunities for youths to have their voices heard, literally, on our radio program, Living Downstream. Kids ages 8 to 18 are invited to submit a 1 to 3 minute audio recording describing what they love about the place in which they live. These could be poems, essays, stories, or songs. We welcome their creativity. Submissions should be sent to our Environmental Education and Outreach Leader at ryan@umpquawatersheds.org with Youth Entry, Sense of Place, in the subject line. This is a great opportunity for families and classes alike. You're listening to an episode of Living Downstream on KQUA, brought to you by Umpqua Watersheds.
A long time ago, I moved from Alaska, from my cabin in Alaska, to Portland, Oregon, of all places. And it was 1980-something, 84, I want to say. And I went to work for a lesbian bar.
Okay.
I mean, I think it's the only one left. It's not even there anymore. But it was one of the few lesbian bars in Portland. And the lesbian culture in that time frame, I'm talking mid-80s, mid to late 80s, was we were kind of out.
Yeah.
You know, we were like poking our heads out. I've always been out. I came out and I haven't gone back in. I mean, that's a whole nother story. But anyway, in the 80s, people were coming out. They weren't bold yet enough, mm-hmm. but it was coming. And one evening when I was tending bar, there was a couple had come in. And I think it was probably a Sunday evening, so it was really quiet. You know, it wasn't the usual crowd. It was very quiet. And they sat down, and I said, "What can I get for you?" And they said they were celebrating their 50th anniversary.
Hmm.
And they were in their 70s.
Yeah.
And they were ecstatic that they could come to a lesbian bar and have a drink. I took it for granted that there was a lesbian bar somewhere and I could go find one.
Yeah.
And I was never really afraid to let people see me walk into one. But these women were from a whole nother generation
yeah.
where just using the word gay, they were called roommates.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't called gay
They're
women
friends.
Or gay couple.
They're really just, good friends.
Right. They've been friends for ages. Right. So we all have our elder community. We all have our elders to look to. And I would like to think that now I can be looked to. Mm-hmm. And I look at and I look with reverence to the older women out here in Southern Oregon who I used to read about when I was in my 20s up in Alaska in lesbian publications and stuff that aren't even around anymore. But I read about them. I knew about them when I was younger. And to be part of that community now is very special to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that my parents would talk about just the lack of actual lesbian women in culture. Like, and then there started to be some gay men in, like, movies and things. But, yeah, it is very much kind of, like, has been, like, quiet. I don't even know how to describe it, but it's like it's exciting to be able to see and be with other people who share something in common.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's what the women only or the lesbian only spaces were all about.
Yeah.
And now they're poo-pooed. I mean, come on, people. I mean, we're getting too politically correct. That's
yeah.
just my opinion about it all. And I think we just let's go back to, you know, chilling out with everybody and having a good time and just being a community. I don't want to have an argument with a 20-year-old about the word queer. I just don't.
Yeah, like if they want to use it,
fine.
Go ahead.
But when I was younger, there was a few. There was Bulldagger, and there was another one from the 40s, is Thumpers. That was big for dykes.
Yeah. Okay.
And lesbians in general. But,
yeah, I hadn't heard that one before.
Well, ask your parent, your mothers about it. I'm sure they can think about someone using it because yeah. it's before our generation.
Okay.
And then there was, let's see, Diesel Dyke. I like that one. I actually had a t-shirt once that had that on there. It had a woman hitchhiking on the road. And that was cool. It doesn't fit anymore, and I don't even know where it is. It's one, you know, it's probably turned into a rag. But those were names and words. And then when people would call me a faggot, I'd say, if you're going to call me a name, at least get it right.
Yeah.
Call me a dyke. Call me a lesbian.
Don't yeah.
I mean, literally, the word faggot means a bundle of sticks.
Yeah, that's what I grew up thinking of it as. So people said that, I'm like, oh, you're talking about some sticks? I don't see any sticks.
Right, like, so I don't like to bash people with that word because it's a seriously ugly word, too.
Yeah.
But my point was that if you're going to call me a name, at least get it right.
Yeah.
That's all I ask, really.
Yeah, and we've been talking about, like, the impact of words and the values of words, and different words carry such different meanings and such different histories or like emotional either trauma or good memories, you know, because of whatever. Like, I mean, even I was thinking about Thanksgiving. So Thanksgiving isn't a word, right? But it's a celebration. And so my association with Thanksgiving uh-huh. is, okay, I'm making a really nice special dinner with my grandma. And so, like, that's what I remember of Thanksgiving. That's, like, the main thing I remember of Thanksgiving. And so, sure. like, I understand that Thanksgiving is very traumatic for some people, but they had a very different experience with it. So it's just, it's what we're raised around and what we get to know in our experience, our lived experience,
right.
that impacts how we view certain words. And yeah, if somebody's used a really bad negative word towards us, or they're using whatever word but in a negative way towards us, then we take that as that's a really bad word or a really negative thing. And then maybe somebody else has used it in a loving way, or yeah, like the way we get treated with certain words and certain holidays and certain
yes.
activities. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, I know about the holiday part. I was raised a Jewish kid.
Okay.
We didn't have Hanukkah break.
Yep.
We didn't have Easter Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah.
It's like who gets noticed, what gets celebrated. Yeah.
And society has to change. I mean, it's not like you can ask it to just be what you want it to be right now.
Yeah.
It would be nice if that's how it happened, but you can't just click your fingers like the lady on Bewitched and it come true. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
And it doesn't get solved in a 30-minute sitcom, which, you know, a lot of people have been inundated with that junk. And it takes everybody.
Yeah.
It takes everybody to want to, I mean, I'm a retired person. I retired from my career in the medical field just last September. And Debbie tells me I need a new activism. And so my new activism is getting people involved in their history. And part of that is getting young women, young lesbians, and I use the word with a capital L, to come out and see and be with us and help us build if you want to. Learn a new skill. Sit there and do nothing but stare at the campfire. I don't care. Just come and join us and see what it's about.
Yeah.
Last summer, we had a couple who, because of COVID, it was a lesbian couple, and they wanted to know, because in the Lesbian Connection magazine, if there's a little bed next to your name, it's an icon saying that you might have a place to stay.
Okay.
The little code. So anyway, they saw that. They said, hey, you know, we want to camp. Do you by any chance have any land to camp on or know somewhere? And I went, well, you hit the jackpot, because I have this piece of property out here, and if you want to come join us and camp there, you can. And yeah. they did for a whole week, and they helped us build one of our micro shelters.
Awesome.
Yeah. So it was a great experience, and they learned what it was about.
Yeah.
And that's my new activism. And it's ecofeminism at its finest, because we're using all the new technology.
Yeah.
And if people want to know what it looks like or help us put it together, then I'm willing to show them.
Yeah, I love the idea of getting to know your history. And yeah, I mean, for different people, it's different, right? Like, I know that I'm some small percentage of some indigenous group, I think Cherokee, but I mean, my grandma would tell us, like, oh, like, you're this percentage or, you know, this fraction or whatever, but, like, I always felt sad that I didn't really know that part of my, like, culture and history and, like, my family's past, you know?
Sure.
And I just, yeah, whatever anyone's history is, it's, like, it's really important to get to know, you know, where you come from or, well, who came before and what came before and just, yeah.
Yes, I believe so, too. Unfortunately, I've seen a complacency happen in the last 10 years. I mean, seriously. And it's good and... The headlines these days are like, gay is mundane now, it's other things, you know? I mean, literally, there's headlines out there saying, it's so passé that you're gay, now what else are you? You know, let's go find something else to rally around. I mean, you can see the articles, but the complacency comes because people like me and the women in the trees did what we did. And stood up for what we believed in and stood there and didn't let anybody take one more tree. That's the stuff that makes it easy to be complacent. And now we got to reamp. We got to find something else to get that passion going and renew our culture.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people are going, I don't want to know.
Yeah.
Well, then you're doomed to repeat yourself. That's the whole deal, right?
Yeah.
That's what I was told.
Those
who don't learn history are doomed to repeat themselves.
Yep.
And it's that lesson that you don't learn that you gotta repeat. And I don't want to do that anymore. So I'd like to start by helping the new young lesbians and the young women who are gay, however they call themselves, come out and be strong and learn a skill and live on the land for a while. It's so much calmer living in the city. It's you know, and for as far away as Cabbage Fields, it's only 5 minutes to I-5.
Oh, cool. Okay.
We're off grid, and we plan on keeping it that way.
Yeah, but it is true that if we don't know what happened or why certain things happen, then they can happen again for better or worse. So.
Yes.
Yeah, if we are complacent and if we don't learn about who came before and what they did to make things what they are now, for better or worse, then we're in danger zone, right? Like, we have the potential to, if it's go down, you know, this bad track, like, we might go down that bad track if we're not careful. I'm just thinking about, like, the environmental movement, too, because I'm talking a lot about environmentalism for abortions, but...
Sure.
Yeah, like, if we have areas that are clear-cut, we know that clear-cuts are not healthy for the environment.
Oh,
and
hell no.
And they impact the water, you know. So it's like, okay, if we continue doing this, like, everyone knows that's not going to end well. So we need to try to change it. We need to learn what's effective, what's not effective, why it's not good. And so that's what Amgwardishes is trying to do, so that we don't just have, like you mentioned with the mining, like, just a clear-cut area, destroying the land. That's not good. We all know it's not good, so let's not do it.
Yeah,
we can't just sit back and be like, well, somebody else dealt with it before. It could come back around. What is that quote that's from the Holocaust? It's like, first they came for this person, and then they came for this person. Like,
it's a very long one, and I have it on the fridge. But
yeah, I like it. And
then they came for me, and there was no one there, basically, you know,
so,
to help me.
Same kind of idea.
Absolutely.
In just a minute, you'll hear the last part of my conversation with Jesse. A few weeks ago, we featured a presentation by local youth, Emily, who submitted a proposal for a summer program to connect kids and the environment during our Eco Innovations Challenge. Her program, called Kids for Nature, is a free activity for children ages 7 to 12 in Douglas County and will take place Mondays and Tuesdays for 3 weeks starting July 12th. The group will go for hikes, learn about environmental conservation, and do a variety of nature art projects using materials we collect during the sessions. We are currently looking for both adult facilitators and youth participants for the program. If you're interested in learning more, please email ryan@umpquawatersheds.org. That's R-Y-A-N @umpquawatersheds.org. Umpqua Watersheds is now offering opportunities for youths to have their voices heard on our radio program. Kids ages 8 to 18 are invited to submit a 1 to 3 minute audio recording describing a positive change they'd make in their community if given the power to do so. Entries could be in the form of essays, stories, raps, songs, you name it. Please send submissions to our AmeriCorps member at ryan@umpquawatersheds.org with youth entry, Making Positive Change, in the subject line. Teachers and parents, reach out if you'd like to learn more. River Appreciation Day is back and will take place Saturday, July 17th. Save the date and look for more information to come soon.
So I'm going to ask first about what challenges persist for the LGBT community today and in this area, and then we'll talk about challenges for the environmental movement and ecosystems. But yeah, first, what challenges persist for the LGBT community today in this area?
In this area or in the world?
Either. I was thinking this area because a lot of the stuff's local, but if you want to talk about the world too.
Well, it's not like it's awful, but I've lived in the area back in the 80s, and I know that in the 2000s, there's an LGBT flag on the church in Grants Pass.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it's not shot full of holes, because there's an awful lot of the other side of the opinion in the, out there, too, and it makes me nervous.
Yeah.
To have my lesbian symbol on my truck. But I'm not going to let people scare me. I've always had one.
Yeah.
And I always will. And it comes in increments. It totally comes in increments. And I think that the same-sex marriage rule that went into effect changed a lot of people, because then they went, screw it, now we can't fight that one. You know, I mean, really, why, and I'm going to say this, why in God's name did anybody say that you could take my rights away? Why can't I have the same?
Yeah.
And who made you the boss? That's where I'm at with it. And it comes in increments. It's kind of like wanting it now and not being able to get it now. You got to start slow, baby steps. Kind of like with this land project. I had to start baby steps.
Yeah.
And it's not going to look good for maybe a year. But I went to Pride every year for 30-something years, as long as it was happening. Of course, it wasn't happening in the beginning, but...
Yeah.
From the beginning of getting to go to one until last year, every year.
Yeah.
And it was very strange to not have that go on. And it's also very strange to read in the paper or on Yahoo that gay rights and the gay issue is going away.
Hmm.
I think Stonewall Incorporated was, they're disbanding. And it's a big financial thing for gay rights.
Yeah.
They're switching their focus. And one thing, yes, that's great. Because now it's mundane to be gay when it used to be against the law.
Yeah.
But there's a gap there that I feel like I don't know how to fill it. And I go back into like Seattle or Portland where everybody is in a bubble. And then I come to Grants Pass where everybody is another bubble. And... I can see where it's progressing, but then there's pockets where it is not safe for me to be still.
Yeah.
I had a man, I was buying a saddle from him, and he saw my little symbol on the back of my truck. And he starts, this was in 2021. This man started asking me about my sex life with my girlfriend. I have not had that conversation with any man since I was in my 20s.
Yeah.
When they come into the bar and ask, outright, ask me. And I'm just looking like, do what? Did I start this conversation with you? No, I did not. So it's still pockets and increments, and you still got to be careful where you're at.
Yeah.
I do, and I feel it probably more than somebody who's 30 because they aren't used to having to live that way.
Yeah.
So it really does. It's generational and incremental. It really is. And we've come a really long way. Really, we have.
Yeah, my parents had to go. We're from New York State, but they had to go to Vermont to be able to get married because same-sex marriage wasn't legal yet in New York. And yeah, so just growing up, I feel like I have a different perspective, as everyone does, with having two moms and just... Yeah, just kind of experiencing some things that they would tell me about history or her story,
right.
And different things they experienced growing up, and not going too much into their own stories. But yeah, no, it definitely does seem different in different places, because I feel like back home, I remember being very quiet about having two moms. And, like, you know, with certain people, it's like, oh, yep, they're really homophobic and you can't be open about what your family is like. And
right.
Yeah, so just, like, having to use certain words or say, like, oh, yeah, like, my godmother or something, which she is my godmother, too. But, yeah, just, yeah, and I think that, like, kind of going back to what we were talking about at the very beginning, this is a part of history that people don't really know about. And unless you're in it, unless you're intentionally looking for it, or you yourself are lesbian, gay, or a child of a same-sex couple or something.
Right.
Yeah, and I think too often people are like, oh, well, that was in the past. That's done. It's not done. Mm-mm. It's not done.
No. I think, and to go back to the beginning and what we were originally talking about, Cabbage Lane was just that full circle for me.
Yeah.
I was homesteading in the late 70s into the early 80s and doing the same thing that the women down here were doing, in just in Alaska as opposed to Southern Oregon. And when I read the stories in all the lesbian publications that were around that I could get my hands on, which were not very, it wasn't easy back then, but I could imagine what it was like down here. And now, when I found Cabbage, I was astonished. I mean, a piece of lesbian land fell into my lap, and all I had to do was make it happen. And it did. And
yeah,
it's full circle.
Yeah, so, like, my next question, which is kind of, like, piggybacking off of that. So, yeah, what challenges persist for, like, land, water, and the environment in this area?
In this area? Well, that's not even an LGBT question. That's a... That's a what the hell's happening down here? I mean, we're in a drought.
Yeah, yeah.
I... 10, 20 years ago, it was wet in Oregon. It was, and I know that Grants Pass is way different. And, you know, it's 90 degrees here and it's 70 degrees in my canyon, or it's 60 degrees in Seattle area.
Yeah.
It's a huge difference and it's a different environment and everything. But it got parched fast around here this year, and it's a little scary.
Yeah.
There is drought warnings, and I think there's even irrigation restrictions down south of us, even mm-hmm. further, Klamath area or something. Okay. And then, of course, California's been drying up for decades. So I don't know. I really don't.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a bigger question than we can answer, I think.
Yeah, I probably don't have enough time for that one. I guess, like, the way I was connecting them in my mind, I've heard some people say that depending on where you are, because we're talking about different locations impact how you're treated and different things, like, sometimes around here, I'm hesitant to have a, like, magnet or bumper sticker on my car that says something about the planet, like wanting to protect trees or something, because there's a lot of hatred and pushback towards environmentalists. Versus back home, I feel like I probably would have been... I mean, I did have a bumper sticker that said, like, coexist, or had, like, a rainbow or something on there. But there were certain places back home where I felt like I couldn't have that kind of bumper sticker or magnet. And so it's interesting to me how, like, you mentioned about having something on your car. And I was just thinking, yeah, like, how different areas, it's either more or less acceptable, whether it's who you are is accepted or not. Or... like, so in terms of being, like, gay or lesbian or something.
Uh-huh.
But then also, like, what you do is accepted or not being an environmentalist.
And the region you're in.
Yeah.
Like I said, talking about logging on this program and in this area is a touchy subject.
Yeah. I guess for anyone listening, I just wish people would realize that there are so many things that we all want that are the same. And it's not that environmentalists or people who are trying to protect the planet are gunning for your jobs. You know, it's not that we're like, oh, like, we don't want you to have a livelihood. It's that we want to make sure that there are livelihoods available for people down the line. You know,
yeah.
It's not just, oh, we're going to take what we want now. Okay, but what about your kids? What about your grandkids? Like, what are they going to be left with? What is the environment going to, you know, what habitat is going to be left, whether it's for the spotted owl or wolves
or humans?
Yeah, like, we have to think sustainably. We have to, at this point, you know, the climate is changing. The world is changing. Like, we need to think as a community, like you said, and we need to work together and not be so, like, greedy and just self-minded. You know, we really right. need to come together around something that's impacting us all.
Well, and keeping in line with cabbage, that's what cabbage is all about. It really is sustaining what it used to be and keeping it going for perpetuity. When I go, nobody can get it. Yeah. Nobody can get it except for women who want to go there and camp.
Yeah.
Or use the land the way we set it up, because Debbie and I are now, we're part of that history. We've made our mark and we're making it for the better. And we're including all of our environmental concerns, like the water runoff, the natural environment in the canyon, the needs that we need to keep ourselves safe and our campers, our visitors safe. And it's all environmental, everything, because that canyon is alive. It you know, tells us what to do a lot.
Yeah.
And how to live. I just can do what I can do. And part of what I can do is make sure that whoever I hire to work on my property is environmentally conscious and friendly. And my contractor person is that kind of person.
Yeah, I guess before we wrap up, is there anything else you'd like to share that we didn't address yet?
The only way to know about something is to go look for it, right?
Yeah.
And lesbian history is important. It needs to be looked for. And the Southern Oregon Women's community in down here is historic. They really are. They're trendsetters. They're pioneers. A lot of them have passed on. I mean, within the last 6 months, we've lost so many of the big names.
Gotcha.
Debbie and I are the middle generation. We're still the young girls on the block, if you will. But there's women out there that are in their 70s and 80s that have stories to tell. Oh, my goodness. And they live on the land that they found, bought, broke in, and built on when they were in their 20s, and now they're in their 80s. Seriously, they live in beautiful homes that they made. Cabbage has some catching up to do, but cabbage is going to be a different experience altogether.
Yeah.
I can give you we do have a website. It's not operating at the time. We're still building it.
Okay.
But we do have one, and we do have an email address, cabbagecanyon@gmail.com.